joining the crew at the Geek Tank. At the Geek Tank, the Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
Hi, I'm Guy.
Hi, I'm Troy.
I'm Senda.
And this is Geek Tank on the Go.
Your, what do they call those little things that they throw the essence in churches when they walk through and they shake the holy water and the burning and the incense?
I knew it until you started saying that.
I want to say brazier. But
I'm just going to say your coffer-sized podcast.
There you go, coffer-sized.
That's the only religious item that popped into my head that contains. Oh, I know, your Ark of the Covenant-sized podcast.
Great. Now it's going to make us face melt.
Don't open this podcast. Whatever you do.
Too late. Just don't know. Just don't look at it. You can listen to it.
Don't look at the podcast. You can listen to it. But don't look.
Don't look at it. I don't know. If they listen
it's
to it, will it make their ears melt?
I don't know.
Only if we're good enough.
Dangerous.
So
You've
for those
warned.
Of you who do not know, Cinda is a longtime friend of the show. She now has three podcasts. You're
no,
doing
no. Just, two. Okay. Two, and yes.
Well, it's fine. Three if you count this one, but you only.
two that I actually really do. Yeah, a couple that I get drafted into.
Yep. The one that you were in when we met you was She's a Super Geek,
yes.
Which is all about females as GMs and game masters and dungeon masters.
Yes, it is an actual play RPG podcast that highlights women as GMs, and we play a ton of different little indie games as one-shots.
Sweet. And then the new one is Talking Games.
Yes, Panda's Talking
Games.
Panda's
Talking Games, thank you.
That's okay, we had to change a little bit because we failed in Google Foo to identify that there was a different Talking Game. So it is Panda's Talking Games, in which Phil Vecchione of Encoded Designs and Gnome Stew and Misdirected Mark joins me to talk about various listener questions or just questions we come up with from the perspective of campaigns versus one-shots. And it's theoretically a short-form podcast.
Hmm.
And that's a joke, so you can laugh.
Ha-ha. Well, thank you for joining us today. So the topic we're going to look at that Guy came up with, and I'll pass it over to Guy.
Yeah, so we were talking a couple of days ago about the idea of religion or geekdom as a religion, or the mixture therein. And this came from a discussion that I had had with my stepmom, which was she had asked about why I was so dedicated to Star Trek. You know, as a sort of a normal person and stuff like that. She has also a friend of hers that is a Trekkie, a hardcore Trekkie. And she was asking, what is it with you two? Why is it you two are so dedicated to this TV show?
Because, like a lot of mundanes, they don't get the geekdom or the dedication that comes with being a geek to certain things.
Right. So I had said to her, well, it's a lot about the vision of the future, in which we get over racism, we get over misogyny, we get over all of this stuff, and we just be good people. And we get out into space, and we go do stuff, and we're all positive, and the world is awesome, and stuff like that. And she's like, gosh, that sounds an awful lot like the reason why I go to church.
Huh.
And I was like, huh. So a lot of this is sort of we also have heard a lot when we talk about in politics, there is the religious right and then the scientific left, as if science is the antithesis of religion or
sure.
the opposite of religion in some way.
Now, remember,
way or another.
You would ask me, what's the difference? Can science be considered a religion and what's the difference? And the first thing that popped in my head is, well, most sciences tend to actually complement each other and work really well together.
Right.
Whereas most religions have a lot of conflict with their.
And they work against each other. But, I mean, the view here is that geekdom, science, all of this stuff is sort of in its own world viewed as sort of a religious function in some way. And so I wanted to kind of explore that and work with that a little bit. And so we decided we'd draft you because you're an expert at this, clearly.
Well, you're a bona fide geek.
I am that.
Yeah.
I'm a super
geek. So... Anyways,
I missed my cue. I was supposed to chime in there, and all three of us say that. Dang it. She's a super geek. Oh.
Okay, ready? One, two, three.
She's a super geek.
And then she... Okay. Anyway.
No.
It's all good.
No.
So that was sort of where we were coming from, was sort of this idea and this concept of...
What's funny is I was just thinking we don't have a guest on to represent the other aspect of this. And right behind you is a girl wearing a shirt that's Colorado Christian University. And I'm like,
right.
Hey, come here, talk about religion from that. But no.
Which we should add, we're at our favorite Starbucks.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is your favorite one?
Well, it's the one we always seem to record at. So.
Oh, really?
Well,
it's truthfully,
this is actually really close to my house. We should. This is nothing to do with the topic.
We should
sorry.
Draft you more often. Really?
Guy lives on the north side of town. I live on the south side of town. So this is roughly right in the middle of the drive. So it's fair to both of us to meet here,
as opposed to going all the way down to Sheridan or all the way up to Arvada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this becomes the middle ground.
Right. Also, this was the first place. I mean, ultimately, this is a bad ending. But when I first started coming up with my fan fiction movie idea for a Star Trek thing called Star Trek Windjammer, this is where I got to meet the girl that really helped inspire and help me create one of the characters. Unfortunately, she's no longer with the project. But it was we did a few of our code readings here and that. So this has a lot of good memories associated with it.
Yeah. So this is just
and coffee.
And it's got coffee. And that's kind of an important thing.
So I guess the thing to look at then is, how is geekdom like a religion?
Or how is it not like a religion? Yeah. You know what I mean? And like,
right. Or I guess we could kind of discuss I could say there's one more perspective on that I think would be really interesting as well, which is without even necessarily equating it to a religion in and of itself, how does it sometimes take that place for us?
Yeah.
If we are not religious, but we are geeks.
Right.
Because I do think that there's a certain amount of, need for us as people that it can fulfill, that other people are fulfilling through religion, even if you don't consider geekdom a religion.
No, so actually.
Just to add a level of complication.
Like I like that level.
No, I mean, that's actually, when you talk about people who put Jedi down as their religion. On the census. Mm-hmm.
Because for those who don't know, I didn't look up all the details on this, but I do know that somewhere Jedi has been officially, the Jedi Order, or the Knights of Jedi Knight Order,
whatever, yeah,
has been actually tax exempt and registered as a religion because someone was able to prove that it's their religion in whatever hoops they have to jump through legally to make that happen.
I don't think there's too many hoops you have to jump through, because I also know that you can officially declare yourself part of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. FSM. Which I would construe that as a very geekdom-oriented.
Oh, it's very much, yes. I agree with you as well. That's
so,
part of the reason I bring it up.
And one could actually argue that is, like, sort of a legit religion that's geekdom-based.
I only know a tiny bit about it. Wasn't the purpose of that to prove, in a weird way, that...
That you could make anything a religion that you felt like? Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. It was like a social science experiment in religion, which everyone sort of ascribes to in an ironic, like, yes, it's funny kind of way.
Mm-hmm. I've seen flying spaghetti monster fish on
cars.
Yes,
which is brilliant.
Because I had a Trek fish on my old car, and I want a Trek fish on my new car.
It's a fish with warp engines on it.
It says Trek. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Which does make it, in a weird way, your religion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and like I have oft said, the belief that we will get out of this and stop being petty and stop being grumpy with each other and stop oppressing people for having different physicalities and stuff like that, that's just as much of a weird belief system as believing in a higher being. Or, I mean, there's no proof in it. You can,
right.
You can't prove either one of them. They're mm-hmm. equally unprovable.
But
so you
but,
have to
but
have
all
faith
of them,
on either side.
Yeah, all of them give us hope.
Yeah. Both give hope.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Wars gives us a new hope.
Well done. Well done indeed.
Why, thank you. So, I mean, you know, it's just...
As well as a forceful awakening.
It's true.
That sounds unpleasant.
It does. Sorry, it was the first connection that I was able to slip in.
That also sounds unpleasant.
He's better at this game than I am.
I remember when as a teenager, when people were like, what is your religion? I was like, oh, it's Troyism. Because it was my play on Taoism. I'm like, if you take the A out and put an R and a Y in, then you have Troyism. And I'm like, it's my own beliefs that I've come up with.
You could do that with Gaiaism, too, because you could just take the G and the U and the Y out.
Yeah, just take everything out. Well, if you take all that out, then you just have an ism.
You could just take out all the first letters and then add ism to whatever you want.
Right. schismism. I was going to use the non-PG 13 word that popped into my head first with that and decided not to.
Good.
But it was one of those...
That's okay. I could be a believer in Star Wars jazz music.
Yeah. Jazz hands?
Jizz.
Jizz hands. That's a totally different thing. But you end up making the same motion because you're trying to get rid of it.
I was going for
really
jizzism.
Hard on this one.
So, well, you have to get there.
Jizzism?
But then the question becomes, does religion have to involve a god? Or is that the difference between a religion and a philosophy? Because with Buddhism...
Right. Do you think that Taoism is a religion? Or
would it be?
Because it doesn't really have...
Because a lot of people who are religious would say, no, it's not.
Confucianism? And because neither one of those are necessarily god-based.
Yes. Personally, I don't believe that a religion needs to necessarily have... a god, or has to have any sort of limitations about how many, mm-hmm. or which one, or what they're like, or anything. That gets into some personal, like, just belief system stuff.
I don't know what he's talking about.
What?
I was thinking, do we need to go to break soon?
Yeah, we need to go to
break. Right before we go to break, I'd like to, when we come back, I'd like to explore the more of the not what necessarily is a religion, but what does it fulfill, like what you brought up, because I think that's a deeper and a better... thing to talk target.
It's probably a better target on discussion points.
I think and I would like to point out that little, like, everybody got lost there for a second there was because Troy and I both suddenly realized our phone's ringers are still on, and we've had our phones ring in the middle of our podcast, so we were turning
mostly
them off.
Guy.
It wasn't really we were just shutting Senda down because
I'm, like, looking back
her.
And forth, and they're both looking at their phones, and I'm like, what happened?
Well, I heard my phone beep, and I wanted to turn it down.
What happened?
Yeah.
Did I say something wrong?
Yes.
We're talking about religion, so it's a little, like,
we have a really short
touchy-goey. I don't know.
We have a short attention span. We had to play Pokemon Go.
Huh?
Oh, wait, we're doing a podcast, aren't we?
Uh-huh.
Oh, crap.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's okay. We can do my podcast instead. Are you ready?
Well, we'll go to break while
we'll
we do your podcast.
We'll do her podcast. And we'll be right after this.
Daddy spread the gospel in Milwaukee. Took his walkie-talkie to Rocky.
This is Senda from She's a Super Geek. You are listening to Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. If you like Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, you may also like my podcast, She's a Super Geek, which you can find at sasgeek.com.
Operation Down Beat. I know. Chills. The quiet pipe are blowing while the musket turtles flowing. All the cats will go, going.
And we're back.
So we're here with Senda.
Hi.
And talking about religion as geekdom or geekdom as religion or something.
Can we come to you for a break?
What are we talking about, you guys? Then we recorded my show, then we came back.
Yeah, we just went to a break, recorded her show. Now we're back. So because of that, I've forgotten. What were you saying?
Yeah.
We're at Starbucks.
You guys need more coffee.
Our guest, who is has her own show, She's a Super Geek, and Panda Talking Games. We were talking, we're going to look at, does geekdom fill a need that would also be the same need filled by religion in that way? Because I was wondering if that could be a way to define it as, yes, it is a religion. And to explore that, I guess we need to ask, well, what need is filled by religion?
And I think that maybe part of that is being part of a group.
Right, there's definitely a community aspect.
Yeah, I mean, it's
that.
Community.
Mm. That's a big one.
Community is a big thing, I think. I think community. I think we also touched on hope earlier, or faith, right? Mm-hmm. In a direction, a positive future.
Now, community-wise, because there's things I really dislike about religions and things I really respect
really
about
like
religions.
About religion, yeah.
And the community aspect is one of the things that I respect about religion. And a lot of people miss that aren't in geekdom, don't realize that geekdom covers that. For instance, locally, we have the 501st, mm-hmm. Who are a group of cosplayers who do screen-accurate Stormtrooper costumes. And I believe just Imperial costumes in general from Star Wars. And the money they raise and the stuff they do all goes to charity. Mm-hmm. And they help out, like, going to Children's Hospital and that. So they really are a big part of the community and really add a lot of hope in that aspect, too.
Right. Yeah. But I think, and also, geekdom creates a community of, it's not true everywhere, as we've experienced with Gamergate and all sorts of other things. But in general, I think that geekdom creates a community of acceptance and, you know, group discussion and friendship based around common interests. Right?
Right.
Like, it brings a lot of people together.
I agree. I think that because a lot of us were repressed or oppressed or one of those S words in the 80s.
Or ostracized.
Ostracized. Uh-huh. You know, and so we get to the point where we're like, you know what? It's all cool. We're all... I mean, I'm sitting here looking at Cinda. She's wearing her little... She's got this awesome Star Wars sweater? She's got a sweater.
It's good.
That has the Rebel and the Imperial symbols back and forth.
Because we all get along.
And
And underneath that, she has a Princess Leia shirt.
Uh-huh. And underneath it, she's got this... so, I mean, it's... And, you know, of course, I've got my hoodie, which is definitely the sciences hoodie from Star Trek with my badge. I've got my communicator on it and everything. Mm-hmm. Although I'm noticing you and I are both not necessarily wearing geek shirts today.
Well, my shirt is geeky in that it's a different language than English.
Mm-hmm. Right. But mine's not. It's just a gift from somebody that I like a lot. So it became one of those things, but it has nothing to do with anything except it's about pets. Anyway...
where are you going?
I don't know. But it was still one of those things. It's like you can see...
Paws, claws, and scales.
Yeah, you know. It's one of
the... Now I'm hungry.
What?
So, but it's a group of acceptance. I can see you and go, oh, you're one of my people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is like with religion, if you're wearing a crucifix around your neck,
you're wearing a cross,
which I always thought it was interesting how somebody would wear a form of execution around their neck, but...
Only if you're executing really tiny people.
Well, it's a miniature version of it.
That's true.
So,
I mean, I'm thinking, what are you doing, ants?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I got a whole line of them lined up to keep all the other ants away.
So basically what you guys are saying, and I agree with you, is that we can identify each other.
Yes. Hey, you're one of my kind. Let's have a conversation.
We are consistently wearing the badges of our communal obsessions.
Right. And there's an awful lot of symbols I've noticed that we are... proud to wear, and you see people in various... I mean, it's not just the Star Wars or the Star Trek. I've seen people wearing Firefly logos.
Absolutely.
And you know, you know right away you're dealing with a brown coat, and it's all cool. And, you know, it's like... And we have icons, although Star Wars people don't have a name still.
I know.
I mean, there's
What's
Trekkies, there's brown coats, and then there's Star Wars people.
People, yes. Star Warsians.
Yeah, we can't really call them Warsians. Warzadzies. That's my new word for them, Warzadzies. Yeah, there we go. It makes about as much sense as anything else.
I can't call them Jedi because some identify more with the Sith.
Right. Mm-hmm. Can't call them Sith because some people identify with Jedi. Then you get peanut butter in my chocolate and chocolate in my peanut butter.
Yeah, but chocolate and peanut butter are like the best combination ever.
And hence like when chocolate, Reese's was born.
The chocolate, no. But even better than Reese's, chocolate peanut butter M&M's.
Yeah, if you just...
Well, I got us back on topic a second ago, and then I just took us right off over here again.
Her rabbit holes are more like wormholes. So then the just go everywhere.
I think part of the need is, I guess when you look at religion, most of the religions that I'm aware of deal with an afterlife, which is where you get the big dividing line between the two, because geekdom doesn't tend to...
We don't really have an afterlife.
...go beyond that.
Yeah. No.
When I die, I'm going to be on the Enterprise. No.
It's definitely much more here and now. I mean, I think that there are a lot more parallels between geekdom and religion in terms of what they satisfy for us socially than there are necessarily in terms of what the actualities are.
I agree.
I mean, other than people picking up religion / philosophy from, Star Wars or Star Wars or Star Trek or anything like that, where they're actually like saying, okay, I am a Jedi now, and that is what I believe, and that's how I'm going to act in the world. That's, to me, that's a little bit different than saying, you know, geekdom as a whole fulfills a similar niche for us socially that is fulfilled for other folks, or maybe is fulfilled for people in both ways by, you know, being religious in a community. And some people do both.
Yeah.
And then you have much community, and that's great.
In fact, the Tackwing group that we play in, there's a fellow there who's obviously a big Star Trek fan because he wears his uniform when he shows
like
up to play.
Yeah, like a full-fledged uniform.
Full-fledged uniform. And I know by his post on Facebook, since we're friends, that he's also very much a Christian.
Yeah.
Which is, it's always interesting to find those people that...
Mix the two.
Which, it was great because for a long time, because I'd only met the bad examples of people that were religious, I had a bad opinion of religion in general. But then when I finally started to meet people that were really cool and into religion, I'm like, finally was able to break past that stereotype.
Yep.
And I leveled up.
You leveled up. I had a similar, if not as intense, experience, but
I think a lot of us have. I mean, it's, and especially when you're, I mean, when we were, well, I don't know. And there's another good question. When you're a teenager and you're kind of searching, You know, that's usually when a lot of people find religion, or in some life or death, you know, situation. But when you're a teenager, one of the two, they both start with T. When you're a teenager and you're searching, a lot of us have found geekdom.
Yeah.
And so.
That's really, really true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, I mean, you think about that. They find religion. We find geekdom. And so.
I'm having a personal revelation sort of moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is good. That's what we were hoping
for. That's what
for.
We're hoping for.
Because the thing, too, is that at that age for me, religion was being forced upon me, whereas geekdom was an option.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think if it was reversed, if someone's like, you will like Star Trek, and then, well, you can go to the church if you want to, but you don't have to, that might have shifted to where I went.
Well, I mean, it's actually really interesting because that is the age in which I was actually specifically searching.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying them on to see if anything would click with me, and I didn't really end up with anything. I ended up with a set of philosophies, but I did end up massively addicted to anime and playing Dungeons & Dragons every weekend.
Yeah.
Like,
you found your community.
Yeah, I did.
You found the community you belonged to, and it was the same with me.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager, I mean, you know, at the time, in the 80s, we were talking about a lot more. It was rough and tumble whenever you were a geek. If you weren't a jock, you were going to get beat up. That was just the way it was going to be. And so we clumped together the five or six geeks, you know, and we watched Robotech over and over and over and over and over and over and over. Until we discovered Macross, and then we were like, and then we got beheaded, and we were like, ooh.
Now you're Old Testament.
Yeah, now we're Old Testament. Because really? Yeah.
Macross is Old Testament of Robotech, which is second.
Yeah. So.
Second edition Bibles, do they? They call it something. New Testament, that's what it is.
But I mean, maybe that's, I mean, you think about that. What is church but a place for all of the people to come together under one uniform group to be community, to be together?
It's really interesting because I have a serious addiction to gaming conventions right now. Like a serious addiction to gaming conventions. And that is basically the church of gaming, right?
Yeah.
Like that's where my people are.
All aboard. I mean, we've talked about conventions numerous times. I mean, how that's where our people are.
Yeah, it is the like most comfortable place to be an extrovert because you know that all the people there are your people, and
you're not going to be looked down upon.
Yeah.
Or, but we talked about this when we were talking about open carry at a convention a couple of podcasts back. We were talking about the reason it made us uncomfortable is because it was
our home away from home.
It was our home away from home.
Yeah.
But now it was
you're saying
that there might be something unsafe about our home away from home.
Right. That's awful.
And that makes
me.
And
it was definitely something that we were like, we'd never experienced it. And then after the convention, we're like, why did the hair on the back of our neck stand up for this situation? Because it is legal.
Mm-hmm.
And we also don't know if the person or not. So they could be good. But that unknowing would be like someone coming in your house with a gun and not knowing who they are. You don't know if they that. Well, we're going to have to go to break. And when we come back, one thing I'd like to explore is the using geekdom as a moral guide. Since religion is also used in that way. And we'll be back after this break.
And we're back.
We are here at our favorite Starbucks, and we have on the show Cinda.
Hi.
And we are talking about geekdom as a religion. Can it be viewed as a religion?
Right.
And
before we went to break, you had a concept.
Yes, I wanted to explore the idea of geekdom as an ethical and moral guideline, the way that religion
is
tends to be an ethical and moral guideline. And for me, what I find interesting is not so much using my geekdom as the guideline, but comparing my own ethics and morals in terms of game terms.
Sure.
So like my own alignment, the way that D&D would use it. Because and this shows where the flaw is in D&D, because alignments are so rigid, and there's a lot of gray areas with people. Mm-hmm. So I definitely would have chaotic in whatever alignment people would assign me to because
chaotic
of my improv.
Yeah, usually
I'm definitely not chaotic neutral, because neutral would imply a lot more. But I'm definitely more of a rogue bard type characters, so I couldn't be
bard.
I just recorded an episode of Pandit's Talking Games in which I talked about my little stack of rogues. Sorry, I have a stack of rogues.
Yep. Ah.
I used to just always play rogues.
Nice.
I got over it.
I get it. Well, it's just, what's funny is I don't tend to play rogues because I am a rogue and
right.
a bard. But I know lockpicking. I know sleight of hand. I know fast talk. I play musical instruments. I do acting. So I definitely fall right into that category.
I started off playing a bard, and then I stopped playing bards because I am a bard.
Yep. But I've had several times where I'll end up in a situation, and the paladin level of mindset kicks in. Like, hey, look, there's a wallet. This mm-hmm. actually happened once. I found a wallet under a chair at a Walgreens on my way to work because I had to cut through the Walgreens because I worked in the mall doing driving instruction. And I saw it, and I picked it up, and I briefly thought, I should give it to someone that works here. And I'm like, but I don't know if I can trust them to return the wallet. And I looked in it, had $300 in cash.
Oh, my.
It had a signed blank check.
Oh, my no. God.
Several credit cards, a key, which was clearly a house key, plus the driver's license with the address to where I'm sure the key would work.
Oh, jeez.
So this would be like a completely immoral thief's dream to find this.
Yeah.
And this was before I had a smartphone, so I couldn't look up an address. So I called my wife, and I said, hey, can you do the footwork for me, look up this person's phone number so I can call them and let them know I have their wallet, and I'll take it to them during my lunch. And she did that, and then I was able to deliver it to the guy. And it was an older gentleman. I would say he's in his 70s. I don't remember because I didn't look at the birth date. But it would make sense why someone – this was back in early 2000 – why someone like that at that age would keep so much stuff because they just don't know. Actually, another thing he had was his Social Security card was actually in there.
Oh, God.
So this was like – it was prime for
it was a bomb yeah.
to go off. But it's one of those things that I returned it because it was the right thing to do, not because I expected any reward. And it wasn't driven by I'm going to get into heaven now because I did a good thing.
Yeah.
It was, I'm protecting this guy because he's a human. He's of my species. He's of my community. I protect my own.
Right.
Because your alignment is good.
Right. So that's, but the geekdom aspect slipped in of equating things in that way.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it wasn't my geekdom that drove that ethics.
Right. Right.
But I know for like we were talking about another podcast about Star Trek's Prime Directive.
Right.
And also just,
which is completely like not useful at all because, you know, we're going to not corrupt Senda because she hasn't invented warp technology yet. So,
jeez, like, you guys, stop corrupting me with your warp technology.
That's so chock full of innuendo.
There's all kinds of things in your window.
Uh-huh. Yeah, front and back.
You know?
And that was an interesting podcast because I explored the dark side of the Prime Directive because I didn't know entirely what it was, but it was created by the Vulcans.
Yeah,
that they would not talk to, or they would, once you develop warp drive, they would show up and explain to you the rules of the galaxy, basically. And my view take was, until you're a danger, you don't matter.
Yeah.
But once you can come play in our playground, you need to know our rules.
Mm-hmm.
Which guy's like, that's not what he meant at all.
Yeah, it just messes with my entire view of Star Trek. So,
so really like, shut him down on that,
yeah,
right?
Just stop. You know, there's an all stop here, because that really freaked me out, so... Yeah.
No, but how would you go to Guy, and then we'll save the best for last, Cinda.
No, I don't know if I have an opinion.
But how would you view your geekdom swaying your morality and ethics?
Well, I think it might even be just very basic. I identify with the heroes in all of the things that I watch, and, you know, Captain Picard would pick up the wallet and find the person and give them the wallet. And so would Kirk. And probably sleep with the wife or something horrible like that while we were at it. But at least he would give the wallet back.
Eventually.
And so would Luke. And, you know, you have all of these people. Mal might not. But Mal was gray anyway.
Well, it would depend on who the wallet belonged to.
That's true.
Because when you get characters like Mal, it's more of a, if you're a bad guy, it's okay to be a bad guy back at you. If you try to kill me, I'm going to kill you first.
Right back. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess really it's because I've always wanted to be Captain Picard or, you know, or Captain Janeway or, you know, Captain Sisko or, you know what I mean? It's always been that way. So none of them, even Sisko in all of his gray area movement was always for the good of the people and for the good of the Federation. And always, even when he was doing like, and, you know, in all of the episodes where he was kind of being... scary.
So it's using the role
models. You can't make that face at me because this is not a visual medium.
Right. Scary.
So it's using the role models that they provide you,
right,
as actual
role models. As they are, and they are role models. So I think that in a way it's very straightforward for me. And, you know, of course, it wouldn't be the way that you, if you were aligned to Star Trek, that's just not the way that the Federation handles themselves. You know, and so it's kind of like that's just inappropriate behavior. So I guess in a way it does sort of give me morals in a lot of ways, but I don't necessarily say that I'm a Federation citizen or, you know, something weird and goofy like that, but it does sort of dictate my behavior. Pass the ball to Senda.
So I'm going to go a slightly different direction.
Yay.
I'm going to go a slightly different direction because my true geekdom, at least for me right now and has been for a while, is playing role-playing games. And so that's not necessarily a set story that someone is presenting to me and then I'm, you know, kind of taking information from. But what I find about them is that they afford us the opportunity to explore both our own morality and other moralities. And basically, by messing with that and exploring it, you can come to a much finer point on your personal stance on things.
Yeah.
So, and I don't usually like to play icky people. Like, that's one of my things. It's sort of a playing to my comfort zone. My comfort zone is to play good characters. But having said that, I have a fantastic time playing a game like Fiasco where you don't necessarily play a good person. And it's really interesting to explore those waters because it helps crystallize, you know, more of your thinking on what you do, because you can act against it. You can explore what it feels like to act against it, which is really interesting. So for me, my geekdom being mainly RPGs right now means I have a playground in which I can mess with and explore and kind of have a really safe way to have some personal discovery. And that's what I would say about it.
There's a lot of discussion that I have heard recently, scientific discussion, that role-playing games are very good for people who are on the autistic spectrum because they can understand and comprehend a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Of what they're missing, the pieces that they're missing in that. And I wonder if also it's a very good way to, you know, pin down your morality.
Right.
I mean, that's what
you're... I mean, it is,
you know,
because...
When you say that, I'm like sitting there going, wait a minute, you know, me too.
Right, right, you know? Exactly. Because then instead of someone telling you, like, this is what you should do, you actually have a little bit of that freedom to explore, like, what would this character do with this situation? And at the same time, you're also comparing that and saying, what would I do in this situation, right? And they're not necessarily the same thing, obviously, because it's a role-playing game. And then you follow through on what the character would do. But you are being confronted with those situations, which might be difficult, like it's the goblin baby test, right? Are my characters really good? The goblin baby test. You come across a group of goblins in a room in a dungeon somewhere, whatever, your PCs slaughter them all because goblins are evil. Okay, now they hear a crying child. It's a goblin baby. What do they do with it? True morality test, right?
Right.
Like, and so you can get into those situations and you can approach that from both, like, what would I as a person do? Because initially I have to have an initial reaction, like, what's my morality? What would I do in that situation? And then I filter that, you know, through, now here's my character, like, what would they do in that situation?
Wow. I just realized that the second Hobbit movie had the goblin baby test. It was the baby spider.
So I'm going to admit that I have not seen any of the Hobbit movies because I'm sort of...
No, my wife doesn't like them either because she really hated the fact that they made 3 movies out of 1 book. And it
well,
really
I can't
mad.
Do the Lord of the Rings movies really either because I'm a true Tolkien fanatic and I feel very strongly about some of the choices
strangely,
they made.
Anyway, I just wanted to say that.
What strangely brought me to watch the Lord of the Rings... I mean, I would have watched it anyway, but...
I didn't mean to rabbit hole
Peter
this.
Jackson...
I know, total rabbit hole.
...used to be basically an independent filmmaker. He didn't have a big budget and he made these really... For all intents and purposes, horrible movies that I loved, like Dead Alive, Bad Taste, which was actually the name of one of the movies he made. And they were all about how much gore and goop and horrible action stuff he could throw into a movie with his $10 budget or whatever he had.
Right.
That was Peter Jackson's break into filming. Well, and when I heard he was making this $1 million movie
yeah,
of
really
Lord of the Rings, But
it's going to be horrible, but really expensive.
They look exactly like I wanted them to look. It's just every time one of the characters opens their mouths, I'm like, oh, why?
The Goblin Baby Test reminded me. I used to do after-school art programs as a job, which was a lovely job. And I was a quest leader. And one of the I was so proud of these kids. They range between ages of 10 and 12. The quest I came up with for them that day, I based off of the Seven Samurai. There was a town that was being attacked by goblin raiders and stealing all the food. But the twist I'd put on it is the goblins weren't attacking. They weren't fighting. They would sneak in at night, steal all the food from the farm, and run away.
Yeah.
However, this was leaving no food for the farmers.
Right.
And so the farmers had hired the adventurers with what little they had to help protect them.
Yeah.
And I was setting it up completely expecting them to get into a lot of sword fights and just take out all these goblins. And the kids were brilliant. They're like, well, they're just stealing the food. They're not attacking people. Let's talk to them.
Yeah.
And so they talked to them and found out the goblins didn't know how to farm. All they knew how to do was fight and steal.
Right.
And so they talked to the farmers and said, can you teach them how to farm?
Yeah.
And they did such an amazing diplomatic job and solved that quest with zero fighting. And you know a group of adults would have been...
Yeah, would have been like, oh, let's just kill them. Yeah. And
easy
experience
points.
And that is the exact same thing, because the thing with the goblin baby is, what do you do with it? Do you kill it because goblins are evil? Mm-hmm. Do you leave it and let nature just take its course? Mm-hmm. At which point, of course, in some future thing, that goblin's totally coming back if that's a campaign.
Goblin King.
Absolutely. Or, you know, do you take that goblin child with you in a nature... or nurture versus nature kind of situation.
Well,
you have to make a moral call on those situations.
We have to take the goblin child to a small little farming ranch, and the three wise men will bring stuff to you, and the goblin child becomes the goblin child Christ, to tie this all back to religion.
And Christmas, apparently.
And Christmas.
Goblin Christmas.
Goblin Christmas.
Goblin Christmas.
And on the goblin Christmas note...
If we're talking about Goblin Christmas, then it must be time.
It must be time for us to get going. You can talk to us on Twitter at @RMGeekTank or Facebook at Facebook.com/RockyMountainGeekTank. Or you can email us the hate mail that we're going to invariably get for Goblin Christmas at questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com.
I'm glad I don't see that email.
You can also find us on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. Just search for Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, and there we are. Be sure to give us stars and likes, even if you didn't. Stars and likes are Goblin Christmas.
Special thanks today to our guest, Senda. You can find her at...
You can find me for She's a Super Geek on Twitter at SAS Geek Podcast. And you can find me for Pandas Talking Games at Pandas Talk Games. And you can also find my articles on Gnome Stew and... I think that's pretty much everything.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. I've been Guy.
I've been Troy.
I've been Senda.
And this is Geek Tank.
Geek Tank is a production of Foxblade Media and is protected under the Creative Commons 3.0 license. Your hosts today were Guy S. Davis and C. Troy Floor. Kevin Weibler is our engineer. And our music was composed by David Coyle. If you like what you are hearing, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/foxblade. I'm Mike Davis, reminding you to brush twice daily. Good night.